This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Inside Story on BFM 89.9.
This Inside Story with Lee Tree Lin and Shamila Ganesan. Yesterday was World Mental Health Day, and there's been a slew of headlines about mental health in Malaysia, so we're looking through them tonight.
First, the DG is suggesting that we upskill doctors to account for our lack of psychiatrists. So how will this work? Then, the health minister announced that My Sejahtera will soon provide mental health assistance. We discuss the intersection between technology and therapy. Finally, how can we take a more holistic approach towards mental health in this country?
So we want to hear from you. How can we make mental health care more accessible in Malaysia? Call 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio. This is Inside Story. It is 6:08, and because it was World Mental Health Day and because we care about mental health, we want to continue the conversation. And because it was that day, there were also a lot of keynote speeches, a lot of launches, a lot of various things happening around it. And a few things were said by the health DG as well as the health minister. So if we start with the DG, Tan Sri Dr. Nur Hisham Abdullah has recommended or is recommending that doctors be upskilled to account for a lack of mental health professional in our country. So he was referring specifically to upskilling GPs and family care physicians to be able to diagnose mental illness in the early stages. And if you're wondering why we need that, currently Malaysia has about 500 psychiatrists, which is one for every 100,000 people. And for reference, this is quite staggering. The WHO's recommendation is for one psychiatrist to serve 10,000 people. So we are really, really lagging.
Yeah, we are vastly underserved when it comes to our access to psychiatry, psychiatric help. And that's just psychiatric help, right? We haven't yet talked about whether there is a usable network of any sort of mental health support, not just in urban centers, but the whole country. And this is actually an interesting one, because when you look at the category of doctors that the DG is talking about, GPs and family care physicians, these are essentially the first point of contact for most communities, for most areas. And so I think cautiously, if this was done well, if this was done in a way that does take into account that mental health care is notoriously difficult for people to talk about or reach out about, there could be something to this idea. I of course, am not familiar with what this upskilling would involve and what this would look like. And that's what we're going to be getting into shortly. But just on paper, I feel like this is a positive way in which to try and address this gap.
The community aspect is so important, because they are the first port of call, yes, but they are also a consistent port of call. They are the people that families would have been going to for years. You are quite likely, therefore, or you are in a good position to be able to notice when somebody comes in and isn't as excited about their grandchild, or, you know, is sounding a little different, is looking a little different, behaving differently. And therefore, that makes a lot of sense. Now, what that would mean for the people going in to diagnose or to get medicine for their cold and suddenly being asked about their mental health. Now, that's the other side of it, right? Because the upskilling is crucial, and how that will happen, how long it will take, is very important. The patient experience, I think, is also something that needs to be taken into account, right? Like, how is this going to be folded into my GP visits? So that's one suggestion for doctors, particularly GPs and family physicians, to be upskilled in order to diagnose mental illness at the early stage. The other thing that was announced is that mental health support will be made available through My Sejahtera. This is part of the government's efforts to make services more accessible. And this was announced during the virtual launch of the National Mental Health Strategic Plan by the Health Minister, Khairi Jamaluddin.
Yes. So in his speech, he talked about a lot of things, really. The fact that it's more important, that it's important for more investment to be made in mental health. He talked about the fact that stigma often becomes a huge issue when people want to reach out. So he talked about improving accessibility and the fact that no one should be left behind when it comes to being able to seek support or treatment. And according to the National Health and Morbidity Survey 2019, half a million individuals aged 16 and above were reported to have suffered depression. So that's actually a pretty large number. And to note, those are just the reported numbers. The actual issue could well be much larger. Again, on paper, not a bad suggestion. I did want to point out, though, that a lot of these initiatives that were talked about, as you said, speeches, discussions, there have been some amount of pushback or criticism from people who have been talking about NGOs and civil society and so on, saying that it's all well and good to talk about these initiatives and these are great, but we also do need to take a wider view of mental health, that it's not just about having access to services, but it really is about the larger socioeconomic system that we live in, and whether over the course of the last year, we have perhaps not addressed these sufficiently.
Yeah, it's also worth saying once more that these are, for the time being, just suggestions, in that we don't have clear guidelines or clear plans on how exactly this is going to be implemented. So when we say doctors are going to be upskilled, do they volunteer? You know, is the government going to reach out to them? When we say that mental health support will be made available in MySujatra, is it going to be a button with a link to Talian Kase? Is it going to be with a bot that's going to ask you a series of questions, for example, and direct you perhaps to someone else?
And if we're already short on mental health professionals, who's going to be providing that support, even if technology is the mediator?
So, light on detail for the time being, but I mean, interesting initiatives, and at the very least, I think an acknowledgement on the part of the government that this is a priority, and one that is made more urgent, like so many other things, by the pandemic and the gaps that it exposed in that time about our mental health care. So we are going to be breaking down these two stories and ending by looking at how we can look at everything more holistically, but we're starting off with that suggestion for GPs and family care physicians to be upskilled to account for a lack of psychiatrists in our country. And to do that, we're going to be speaking, of course, to a psychiatrist. So joining us after this will be Associate Professor Dr. Muhammad Mohsin Ahmad Zahari, Consultant Psychiatrist at the Department of Psychological Medicine at University of Malaya. So that will be coming up. And let us know what you think. What do you think of these initiatives, and how can we make mental health care more accessible in Malaysia? Call us 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio.
Beyond Frivolous Matters, BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
It is 6:16 and you're listening to Inside Story with Lynn and Sharmila. We are looking today at a bunch of stories that have to do with mental health in Malaysia because, of course, yesterday was World Mental Health Day. So first up, we are going to be touching on this suggestion from the DG, who's recommending that doctors be upskilled to account for a lack of mental health professionals in our country. He's talking about GPs and family care physicians. And we wanted to know, I mean, what could that look like? And also, while we're talking about the gap in terms of healthcare professionals, what about the gap between being a GP and someone who can actually work to diagnose these sorts of situations, right? So we are going to be diving into that, but we'd also like to hear from you. How can we make mental health care more accessible in Malaysia? Call us 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. Joining us now to talk about this is Associate Professor Dr. Muhammad Mohsin Ahmad Zahari, Consultant Psychiatrist at the Department of Psychological Medicine at University of Malaya. Dr. Mohsin, thanks for speaking with us.
You're welcome. Yes.
So, like we said, the Health DG spoke about empowering general practitioners, family care physicians with the skills to manage mental health. What were your first thoughts when you heard about this?
Yes, of course, in the context of Malaysia, where we are quite lacking in a number of psychiatrists or mental health professionals, including counselors as well as clinical psychologists, this is the measure we should introduce now. The approach has been recognized, what we call it as task shifting. That means delegating the task from the experts to the rest of healthcare professional. So I think for general practitioner and primary care physician, they have important roles to help in addressing mental health issue, and I believe it can help to counter whatever the adversity of the mental health that occur. For example, reducing the extremists, we're talking about the reducing suicide or risk of abusive behavior, aggressive behavior. All this for long-term chronically can be helped by general practitioner and healthcare, family care physician. And we are from time to time as well, it is like blessing in disguise as well, you know, when they are empowered to do all these measures, because we can see so many private clinics or more family care physician around. So accessibility would be improved if they can also help to manage a patient with a psychiatric illness.
So typically speaking, as of now, what role do these doctors play when it comes to mental health care?
Yeah. Basically, for example, we have clinical practice guideline for eye involved in major depressive disorder. There are also guideline for bipolar. So in the guideline itself, we talk about empowering for the general practitioner and general doctors, you know, to help in managing all these psychiatric conditions. So, of course, among the primary important step they can do, we call it like psychological first aid, you know, that once somebody are under very distressed, they actually can help to deliver, because the skill, even like psychological first aid, you know, it's not confined to doctors, but it can be other healthcare personnel as well. Apart from that, for example, more details about psychiatric intervention, we're talking about, for example, giving a supportive therapy. Supportive therapy, actually empowering them to listen to listen from the patients and allow the patient to talk to someone, you know. That means the doctor has a role to facilitating the difficulties, for example, and also psychoeducation. We call it psychoeducation, about educating the public, those who come to the clinic, about the importance of having healthy lifestyle, a good mental health practice, you know. And this is the primary care physician as well as GPs can play. So they definitely have an important role in helping in this aspect.
So what sort of additional training, then, would a doctor go through to upskill?
Of course, it is very important for them to be what they call, for example, be trained in psychiatry. And most of the doctors, basically, when they are doing undergraduate in MBBS, for example, it is definitely for local universities. We have, like, you know, like in UM, we have 2 months or 8 weeks of attachment in psychiatry. So it is similar. Go to medical also, they have 8 weeks, to surgical, so 8 weeks. So you look at you can look here. Basically, the training is quite intensive, and they should be capable of addressing the basic needs of the mental health and providing treatment for those who are having mental illness. However, I have to be cautioned from this statement. Some as graduate from overseas. Not many, but quite few in number, they've not been properly trained. You know, for example, for psychiatric training, they're not meeting patients. They just do in the class training, for example, or theoretical learning. This is a bit caution. These people, I think, needs a little bit of extra time when they do houseman, for example. They can do exposed to the psychiatric training, because in Malaysia, even now, it's good. secretary has been one of the postings need to be completed by the those who doing housemanship.
So from the patient's perspective, what would it look like what could it look like for mental health checks to be integrated into a GP visit?
That would be actually, I would say it's overall it's good because we are breaking stigma, because now even the place where we put our clinic, our hospital has been seen as a very negative perception by the community, you know, the hospital itself. So when general practitioner able to help in handling psychiatric patient, the stigma would be less, because besides they are treating for diabetes, hypertension, they also can help for psychiatric patient. That's one. But I think the better thing is the holistic approach. So patient not only being seen as having, physical illness, but they will be seen as the whole person, you know, including their mental aspect. That's why, for example, in our clinical practice guideline, we put for any doctors, you know, should have a screening questions, you know, that means some sort of question that help them to ask the patients, you know, whether any possibility this patient having mental illness or not. So if there is, then can explore further. But it should give a room for them to explore that possibility. And of course, some employer, for example, we encountered this, they're not so keen with if the patient, you know, receiving treatment from psychiatric, you know, with the stamp over there, you know, psychiatric consultant, psychiatric psychiatrist specialist. So when go to this general practitioner and receiving treatment, basic treatment, for example, if required, whether supportive therapy or whether they need antidepressant, it won't be identified as psychiatric patient. So this will be liked very much by the patient if our general doctor can help to manage this general or the basic case of mental illness.
So we have a question from Delma, who wants to know, what can a patient expect if they were to bring up mental health concerns with their GP?
We are also involved, from Malaysian Psychiatric Association, for example. And also, I think now the Ministry of Health also, when we having clinical practice guidelines, they should be trained. So I believe from the GP's end, you know, they should be able to give a time, usually in the general practitioner point of view or the primary care, the time is limited. They have hundreds of patients sometimes, you know. So this is limit their time to ask about psychiatric patient. This is always what we get from them. However, if the patient able want to share some information about their mental difficulties, you know, it could be as simple, I mentioned that, you know, for example, about sleep, they have difficulty sleep, up to they feel they are overwhelmed with things happening around them. I believe this general practitioner or primary care physician would be able to, you know, further that conversation, you know, to address whatever needed, you know, to understand the basics needs of this patient require, you know, in order to reduce this stress. So I think they have this capability. The only thing sometimes they have a perception that the patient not really like, you know, if the doctor seems to ask about, because psychiatric questions sometimes, you know, ask how you're feeling, everything can be sensitive to some people. So this is probably assumption, but if the patient doesn't speak up about their emotion, about their complaint about mental health, this doctor probably not open up at the first moment. So they expect the patient to talk first, and they will can have further conversation and interview on mental health issues.
Dr. Mohsin, unfortunately, we are out of time, but thank you so much for speaking with us today.
All right. You are welcome. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. That was Associate Professor Dr. Mohamad Mohsin Ahmad Zahari, Consultant Psychiatrist at the Department of Psychological Medicine at University of Malaya, talking to us about a proposal, a recommendation from the DG that doctors, general physicians and family care doctors be upskilled in order to be able to manage mental health. We'd like to hear from you. What are your thoughts on this? And also, how can we make mental health care more accessible in Malaysia? Keep them coming. We'll be back after this on Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
Bodacious, fabulous minds. BFM 89.9, the business station.
It is 6:38 and you're listening to Inside Story with Lynn and Sharmila. Our focus today is on mental health. We're just continuing the conversation that was begun yesterday and beyond that, because yesterday was World Mental Health Day. And with that came two separate announcements. One that we're just about to get into, which is that mental health support will be made available through MySejahtera. And that's something that we wanted to explore. But before this, earlier, we were talking about a recommendation from the DG that doctors be upskilled to account for a lack of psychiatrists in Malaysia. So we've been asking you for your thoughts and, you know, how to, in essence, make mental health care more accessible in our country. And we have some thoughts.
So Loke has an interesting one. So they say upskill some GPs, yes. Upskill all GPs, no. There's a reason why not many people can be psychiatrists. And I find that interesting because I think, at least from what I understand of what the DG said, the idea is to provide a sort of early port of call diagnosis, right? And if we think of GPs, their job is already sort of to do that for all sorts of health issues. And therefore, to say that only some people are qualified to do that would then perhaps indicate a larger issue with the skills or the quality of our GPs in general.
Yes, I also think, however, it speaks to a certain almost like a belief that mental health is like a mystical field that only some people can access, that the mind is impenetrable. And I mean, I don't want to downplay how difficult it can be to provide psychological and psychiatric help. But I also think that on a daily basis, GPs provide to a certain degree triage. They're the ones deciding whether or not you go home with Panadol or whether they're going to refer you on to a specialist. And so in some ways, the skill set is there. It's just whether or not that can be extended. I think maybe it's also more an issue of density when it comes to who we upskill and who we don't, right? And how it is that you assess that. We also have this from Madiha, who says, mental health access in the primary care setting is all well and good. However, it sounds highly aspirational. Government community clinics have no problems identifying and referring the necessary patients to tertiary specialist centers. But often, as with all other specialists, interventions, there's a delay for non-urgent cases to finally be seen. In the meantime, government clinics are deprived of resources in terms of certain drugs that can only be prescribed by a psychiatrist due to cost rather than anything else. Additionally, the question of the legal duty of care for the mental health patient will be an added burden to the regular doctor, who may be liable for any harm that occurs, not to mention the lack of mental health access to medical personnel, first and foremost, as doctors too face barriers and stigma surrounding their own mental health. Madiha, a series of really important points, I think.
I absolutely agree. And I'm glad that you highlighted those. I actually would like to see those addressed by the people in charge, because if this is something that's going to happen, I think those are very important questions to keep in mind.
Keep those thoughts coming, whether it is about upskilling GPs and family care physicians, or whether it's about mental health support through technology, because it is apparently going to be made available through the MySejahtera app, which is what we're discussing next. Share your thoughts with us. What do you make of these initiatives? How can we make mental health care more accessible? Call 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio. And talking about that intersection of technology and therapy, we are crossing over to Dr. Chua Suk Ning, founder and clinical psychologist at Relate. Suk Ning, as always, nice speaking with you.
Hello, thanks for having me. Sorry, that was a little bit too cheerful for such a serious topic, but I'm really glad to see you guys.
So it's good to see you too. I wanted to get your thoughts on this move for mental health support to be available on MySejahtera. I mean, we don't yet know what form it will take, but what are your first impressions?
Well, my general take is that any investment in mental health is a good one. Whether or not it's effective, we don't know. But first steps are good. More steps are good. More money is good. More people being informed about mental health. That's always good. And we have to, you know, as you said, we don't know what it's going to look like. We just have to make sure that it's having a beneficial effect and not a detrimental one.
So considering that Maisjatra has this wide reach and the fact that different people have different levels of comfort with both technology as well as with mental health, what would actually be helpful?
Well, right now, a lot of the apps on Maisjatra, I think I went on today and I went on Selangor's app as well. And a lot of it seemed to be screening first. And then giving you some information. So right now, I think we have to think about what whether the infrastructure to actually provide treatment is there. You know, so once you complete a questionnaire, what's next? And I think all Malaysians are waiting with bated breath to know what's going to be next.
Could you talk to us overall about the role of technology when it comes to mental health, particularly from your vantage point?
Well, as you know, Relate Malaysia does almost exclusively online therapy, and we do a particular type of online therapy. We don't do apps or text therapy. We focus on videos. I think everyone now, after 2 years of COVID-19 pandemic, realizes the limitations of just text. You know, I mean, the limitations of just seeing your video, it's not the same as face-to-face, but, you know, every one step removed is actually harder and harder for us to connect to one another. So we only use video. So I think technology is a really useful tool, but we have to see whether it's effective. Why we chose video call is because the research shows that overall it's as effective as in-person. Now, it's not the same experience, but it's as effective. The research on the effectiveness of apps is still not consistent. There's not a lot of good research on that. And the research on text therapy, writing emails, it works for some people and not others. So we really need to understand much more about what we're investing in and whether we're going to, what is the cost-benefit analysis for this.
So you mentioned the limitations of video call. Now, over the last 2 years, we've seen a huge increase in therapy, mental health support being given virtually in many ways. Are these as effective as face-to-face help as a therapist who does work online? How do you gauge whether it's working or not?
Well, I'm very effective. No. all our clients complete a questionnaire. So just like in person, we know week to week how they're doing. And we know if they have to be improving. If they're not improving, we talk to them about what's going on. Now, again, you know, as I think one of you pointed out, that it maybe doesn't work for everyone. Not everyone's comfortable, right? But for those who are comfortable with this, you know, the therapist has to be trained, first of all, to provide even video calls or even text therapy, because there's some things that don't come naturally. Right? You know, how do you convey, I'm really listening, you know? Yes, I can see you guys nodding your head really well. Yes. And you know, but when you're face to face, we don't pay attention to what we're doing to communicate. I'm listening and I care about you, because we rely a lot on body language. But with video, we only see your head on your upper half. So you have to be trained on to translate what you do face-to-face in person into what you're going to do in video through video call. And if you get that training and if you use a progress outcome monitoring form, you can be as effective.
So just the act, I think, of making a call or fixing an appointment can often be quite intimidating, taking that first step to reach out and get support. In your view, does technology reduce these barriers?
I believe it can. So a really cool thing that's being done overseas is that we're becoming more and more proactive in reaching out to people who maybe express distress. Now, that proactiveness really has to be top down as well. So we have to convey to people there's no danger, there's no consequence if you report symptoms. What you are going to get is you're going to get really caring, empathic, effective care. Then people will want it. But if people say, oh my gosh, if I report that, You know, what if my data leaks out? So we need to look at data privacy. What if my employer finds out? What if my insurance goes up? You know, who will access my data? And the person who calls me, what would they say if every time, you know, you report low mood and someone calls you and say, hey, are you okay or not? Okay, yeah, okay, good. And it puts on the phone, like nobody would want to report that because it's an aversive experience, you know? So we have to really make it safe for people to report it and really make sure that people are getting the help that can be effective.
So Nick, we just have a couple of minutes left. What are the benefits and risks of delivering mental health care through technology instead of physical presence?
This might sound like a cop-out, but it's not. Really, we need more research. You know, so what are we promising our end users, right? Once people tell us about low mood, we have to honor that self-disclosure, right? Otherwise, they're just reporting it. And if we don't give them something effective, that's the risk. We haven't delivered our part of the bargain, right? But if people report something and we keep their data private, we keep it confidential, we reach out in a really caring manner, that's going to be helpful. So I think, but we really, you know, a lot of research, unfortunately, is just done overseas, and we have nothing on very little research done locally. And so we need to really understand what we're doing and what our end users' experience are, what they actually want, what they would find helpful, and how it's going to be integrated into the healthcare system. Right? Our GP is going to access that. You know, who's going to be able to see that data?
Suk Ning, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
That was Dr. Chua Suk Ning, founder and clinical psychologist at Relate, talking to us about the intersection of technology and therapy, which is something that I think she's uniquely positioned to talk about because she does therapy almost exclusively, like she said, online. And we're talking about this because mental health support will soon be made available through MySujatra, which is an interesting development. And we essentially wanted to talk about what that might look like. So keep those thoughts coming. What do you make of both mental health being made part of MySujatra, as well as the recommendation that GPs and family physicians be upskilled to be able to diagnose mental illness in the early stages? You can call us 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio after this, how we can take more holistic action. Keep it here on Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
Bole for Malaysia. Ha. BFM 89.9, the business station.
It is 6:51 and you're listening to Inside Story with Lynn and Sharmila, which is focused very much on mental health today, particularly accessibility in our country. This is coming after two suggestions / announcements that the DG is suggesting that we upskill doctors to account for our lack of psychiatrists. Khairi Jamaluddin also announced that MySujatra will soon provide mental health support. So we talked earlier about technology and therapy. We also spoke about upskilling our doctors. And now we want to address the fact that this is really a holistic issue, right? It's something that we need to look at in total, not in parts. And last Friday, our colleague Ti Xiao Yik from The Bigger Picture, alongside consultant urologist Dr. George Lee, spoke to Anita Abubakar, president of the Mental Illness Awareness and Support Association, on what kind of challenges comes with ensuring mental health care is accessible to everyone. We're going to be playing you some clips from that conversation. So first up, Anita spoke about how our country is faring in terms of advocacy in mental health compared to others.
See, one of the things about YASA and the advocacy work that we do, we also belong to TCI Global, which is Transforming Communities for the Inclusion of People with Psychosocial Disability. And, you know, we're part of the steering committee, so we engage with a lot of our members from Asia Pacific and also other regions. And just to give you a little bit of insights, in other countries, especially even Indonesia, although there's many institutions in Indonesia, but in terms of advocacy and mental health, they are far ahead of us because they very much follow UNCRPD, United Nations Conventions on Rights of Persons with Disabilities. So they talk a lot about inclusion. They fight a lot for the rights of people with mental health disorders in their respective countries. So if you want to make that comparison, we are, I have to say, just through the discussions roundtable data that we have, we are about 15 years behind. Right now. Oh, but the pandemic hit has helped us tremendously. in progressing the whole entire conversation. And I've seen it. Mental health literacy has improved. Help seeking behavior has improved.
So Anita speaks about the gaps that we have in the system when trying to provide sufficient mental health support, as well as some ways to address them.
So the first thing, any person with a mental health disorder, because we've got supported employment programs, so they'll ask us, Panita, should I disclose my condition to my employer? And I always say, if you feel up to it, please do, because it paves way for everyone else. Because if not, what will happen is usually suddenly when the employee finds out because of your MC or, you know, recurrence of episodes happen in the workplace or you relapse, and then there's a lot of judgment, labeling, stigmatization that happens, and then you'll either be forced to leave the workplace or, you know, they're not going to accept the MC. You're not going to be able to, whatever responsibilities that you have now, you're not going to be able to continue that after you go through your, you know, 2 months, 1 month MC. So it's very difficult for you to sustain your job in the workplace. Two, when it comes to education, that's the same thing. If you were to disclose that you have a mental health disorder, especially those with scholarships, you're not going to be able to study overseas if you disclose it, because for funders, to them, you are seen as a risk. So you're only allowed to study locally. So that's also the other thing. And it's so obvious, you know, Shaoyi and Dr. George, like when we go for our talks and programs for, you know, students that have twinning programs or, you know, will eventually go overseas, and we say, you know, are there any questions? Usually there's none because of that fact, because they are not able to disclose that they have that condition, or they're afraid to even disclose that they are struggling emotionally or psychologically, a fear of not being able to go overseas. So that discrimination, that gap exists as well. But a lot has been done right now. And of course, housing is the other thing. A lot of people fall through that gap itself. And I think one of the big solutions that can happen is providing low-cost housing, you know, working with state governments. You know, we have a lot of Wakaf land, we call it, and hopefully by working together, we will be able to do more in providing that. So in actual fact, we don't have a sustainable model as of yet. So this is how that vicious cycle continues to happen right now. So you go through that recovery process, but nobody wants to give you that job. So now you don't have basic needs, and then you can't get a roof over your on top of your head. And then it reinforces stigma, because then people will say, look, Juanita, a person with mental health condition can't work. Mm-hmm. You know, they can't recover. So those are some gaps right now.
Anita then shared some of the initiatives that her association, MIASA, that is the Mental Illness Awareness and Support Association, has advocated and pushed for in order to improve the mental health system as a whole.
You know, currently we talk a lot about, we do a lot of advocacy work. And so one of the things that we talk a lot about is obviously providing supported accommodation and also supported employment, right to work. And what we have done in 2019, we did in an international mental health recovery conference followed by the Malaysia stakeholder meeting, where the stakeholders that were there, we collectively agreed upon 5 resolutions, which 2 of them, the top 2 was actually providing supported accommodation and housing for people with mental health disorders, and providing supported employment and the right to work for people with mental health disorders. So it's not just MIASA, it's actually the stakeholders collectively in Malaysia trying to push for this. And also the 4th resolution was the right to health care. And the last one was actually to close down mental institutions in Malaysia, because we don't want to be in institutions. Recovery must be in the community. So we advocate for this very much. And right now, MIASA is running a campaign called Zero Coercion Campaign, because in Malaysia, a lot of coercion happens. And we just want to bring this conversation out in the open, Dr. George, because we want to practice, you know, we want to work on alternative solutions to coercion. We want to promote supported decision, because every person with a mental health condition must come to a informed decision, which they should and they can, and also informed consent must be practiced. So this is why we are opening up this conversation, so that we can improve the whole mental health system as a whole.
Finally, Anita talked about what she wants to see being tabled in the upcoming budget plans in terms of mental health support.
We're very happy if we can expand community mental health services. One of the things that I always say is we do not have enough social holdings for people with mental health disorders and disabilities. So where do we see people like us? Usually in clinical settings, rehab centers, right? Because we don't have a place where we can engage, socialize. And I feel via community centers, because we have a lot across the nation, which are underutilized. You know, when I drive pass by a community center, I see 2-3 cars. So if we can convert that into an activity center or crisis management center, we can help a lot of people. So I hope to see that and more job creation, job opportunities via this budget. And of course, supported accommodation. You know, this is a right of every single person in Malaysia, and this right must be given to us, especially those that are not able to help themselves.
That was Anita Abubakar, president of MIASA, speaking on The Bigger Picture last Friday. For the full conversation, you can search for Doctor in the House, World Mental Health Day, Is Mental Health Care a Reality for All? On our site, bfm.my, and our app. And mental health has been the focus of the last hour. You've been listening to Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.